Louis Black may be known as the angry comedian, but his new book is likely to make more than a few people furious with him. Me of Little Faith is Mr. Black's extreme, outrageous, uncensored take on the world's religions. And if you believe in a God that punishes people with hell, you've got to believe that reading this book might be enough to doom you and Mr. Black for eternity. It's published by Riverhead Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings Louis Black to the show today. Hello.
Hello there.
Is there any topic you won't touch?
I didn't, in the book, I didn't talk about Islam.
Uh-huh.
Because, why?
Enough other people are talking about
it. They're talking about it, and I don't need the aggravation. Uh-huh. And since they reacted to a cartoon the way they did, I thought one paragraph was sufficient.
So this is really just about not having death threats?
No, it's part of it. I mean, you know, it's Scientology. I didn't want lawsuits. And also because really part of the reason, though, is that there's – I only talked about things that I had direct contact with, where I experienced it, either with a friend. Well, so when I talk about Catholicism, I have so many comics I know, so many people, friends of mine, radio guys I talk to who all have born and raised Catholic and can go through a litany of things and the church's abuses. And so I just talked about me and my friends in terms of discussing those things.
Well, you're in show business. You must know a fair number of Scientologists. I mean, I remember meeting Katie Holmes before she became a Scientologist.
Yeah, see, I know none.
You just don't know.
I don't know any.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I just don't know is right.
Your family was Jewish. Were they devout?
No, my grandfather was not very. Neither of such a grandparents were really, because they're the first generation. Usually, that generation is Orthodox. Some of the family is Orthodox, not our part. And then, but they gave me. My parents did the religious training and the whole thing.
So you went to Hebrew school and you were bar mitzvahed.
I was bar mitzvahed, and I went all the way to confirmation.
You were born the same year as Israel. Was that significant?
It was significant in the sense that we had my bar mitzvah was Israel's bar mitzvah. They had a big thing. I'm from D.C., around D.C. We had a big thing there. And this year, I can't even begin to tell you how many invitations I had to celebrate the 60th birthday of Israel.
Uh-huh. Well, it is an important celebration.
It is an important celebration.
And happy birthday, 60.
And good for them. However, it's like because I was born on the same date and because I'm Jewish doesn't mean I got to be there. You know, I don't have to show up.
Well, you say the last time you attended services, you were in graduate school.
Yeah, I was. That was it.
What brought you to the services then?
I was living in a suburban area of Connecticut, and my friend of mine who was also Jewish said, you know, we ought to go to a Yom Kippur service. I haven't been in a while. It might be good for us. So we went down, and it was nightmarish.
Atone for your sins.
Yeah, yeah. It just reminded me of all the reasons I left.
But you say the deal breaker for you was Hanukkah.
Well, Hanukkah, the lack of gifts, it's just appalling.
You mean if Hanukkah had been more like Christmas as it's become, you might still be a devout Jew?
I certainly not even what it's become, because when I was a kid, it wasn't a huge deal. It was sort of big, but not really what it's become. And my friends were still crushing me in terms of gifts. I mean, as I said, when you give a kid a top and tell him to play with it and you think a top is a toy, something is wrong.
You're talking about the dreidel.
The dreidel, yes. You can call it whatever you want. I know.
So you have it against. You have something against the dreidel.
I think it's not fun. I think even if you're an LSD, a top isn't fun.
But this is all materialistic stuff. What about religion on another level? Did you question the basic concepts of religion when you were a kid, whether it was yours or the ones of the kids you were going to school with?
It was interesting because the kids in my neighborhood were a total mix. So there's a friend of mine that was kind of, who literally left, you know, when he was about 12, it's like they kidnapped him and he went to preschool. I mean, it was like he's going and he's going to be a priest.
Because his family decided that.
Yeah. And, but we all talked about this stuff and none of us really, we were all kind of like, really? You think so? Huh? Really? There was no one in the neighborhood that I was ever saw that was that kind of Christian you see in Saved. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that really has come along later, but there was nobody. The Protestants in the neighborhood were Protestants. The Baptists were Baptists. They weren't. And nobody was trying to convert each other.
And so nobody was calling you a Christ killer?
No.
Because you know any of that. Do you remember Lenny Bruce's bit on that?
Yeah.
Where he gets beaten up all the time, and finally his Uncle Morty gives him a note, says, Lenny didn't do it, I did it. Well, it's good that you were spared that. I mean, that would have made you a much bitterer comedian, don't you think?
Probably. I don't know if it would have made me funnier. I don't know if I would have become a comic if I was more bitter.
But you say that you were sad when the epithet Christ Killer was retired.
Yeah, because I thought that it was a pretty... I thought, you know, it was like something... I mean, how macho can you be? You end up... You're the people who got rid of God, you know? I mean, how big... How much more...
Well, that makes you a big guy.
Well, think about it, you know? It's like... And then also I like the concept of God says, you know... it's like the idea of, you know, you're going to... It's just something about the whole idea of being, how much more kick-ass can you be than that? You can't.
You know, you don't mind it, but you're getting me in a lot of trouble, Lewis.
What?
This segment's going to get me in a lot of trouble.
That?
Whatever it is, I deny that I was even here.
I know, that's what you led me there.
Do you think that adversity...
We could have talked about other things.
I don't know whether we could talk about too many things in this book that aren't going to get me in trouble, but that's okay. We decided to have you on the show.
But my mother is the one who said, I really finished it, I didn't think. I thought, in a lot of ways, that it wasn't going to get me into trouble until my mother said, you're in trouble.
And then she read the book, she said, you're in trouble.
She said, it's a really good book, you're in trouble. And but I think that, you know, the thing is at the beginning of the book, and I'm going to say this to those of you out there who are already offended, I say absolutely in no uncertain terms, if you have no sense of humor about religion, if religion is absolutely something that you consider in your lockbox and you don't want anyone to make fun of it, don't read the book. Just don't read it. It's not worth it. It's not worth your time. It's not worth my time responding to you being upset by it. It's the one thing that we do now that's totally absurd.
Well, Christopher Hitchens and others have written other kinds of books in which they're making some similar points.
Yes.
Although they don't have the mystical experiences that you have.
Yeah,
they'd be shocked by your mystical experiences.
Yeah, they'd be disturbed by them. I wouldn't really want to sit down and discuss it with Christopher.
Lewis Black has written a book called Me of Little Faith, his latest book. It's published by Riverhead Books. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You write that the first time you felt truly comfortable in a place was when you went to Chapel Hill to college. Why? What happened there?
I don't really know. I mean, it was kind of strange, but I'd been looking around for schools and stuff, and I wandered onto the center of campus there, the old part of the campus, and I felt like I belonged there. And I had not had that. Usually I'm not really that comfortable in places. That and the other place I find myself really comfortable is Williamstown, Massachusetts, and I have no idea why those two places have an effect on me.
But not, you say, St. Petersburg.
No, St. Petersburg, Russia. No,
it's the place of your ancestors.
Well, it's pretty close. They're all kind of around it, except for my grandfather wasn't sure if it was Poland or Russia, depending on what year it was. But St. Petersburg was really, they really hadn't done any work on it. I wish I'd seen St. Petersburg during all of that time when we had this huge Cold War that apparently we were going to lose to the Russians, and granted they might have nuclear weapons, but man, oh man, their infrastructure makes us look like we're living in the 21st century.
Yeah, I really have to wonder why they have allowed this treasure of a city to go into such disrepair.
It's sad.
Although it still has one of the greatest museums that you could ever hope to visit, the Hermitage.
The Hermitage, which was really the high point of the trip. And then they have a place you go out to that's an old, I forget which czar, so maybe Peter's had this summer place. You go out there and there's starting to to redo places. I guess they're finally figuring out that people will come see this stuff.
Did it make you feel more Jewish? Because sometimes when you're in places where there's a lot of anti-Semitism, you suddenly come in contact with whatever you're, I guess, where there's some prejudice. It doesn't matter if you're black and you're in an area where there are a lot of white people who are saying racist things, or if you're a Muslim and you're in an area where everybody is making towel head jokes, et cetera, et cetera. And they say that once you cross the Danube, you're going to face an awful lot of anti-Semitism.
Yeah, no, I didn't have that. But you know, I'll tell you when I did, because I did have that experience. I'm on a boat that is leaving Marseille the day after the second day of the Six-Day War that Israel was fighting. And I'm on a boat, me and two friends, one other Jewish friend and a Catholic friend. We're also the only Americans on the boat and the only non-Arabs on the boat. And we're going to Tunisia. And for those, that two-day cruise, boy,
you felt
I felt very Jewish. Mm-hmm. I felt super Jewish.
Now, I mentioned Christopher Hitchens, and there have been a number of other books recently by scientists and others who have questioned the need for religion. What do you think that you're offering in this book that they're not?
I think what I'm offering is I'm not really slamming. I think Hitchens, Harris, Sam Harris, there's a number of guys who wrote these, and I think
Dawkins is another.
Right, and Bill Maher is doing a documentary. And the thing was is that when I was writing this book, I thought, well, what's going to make my book different? I mean, all these guys have really done a tremendous job of kind of analyzing and slamming, you know, organized religion. There's a whole other group of people.
Well, do you read those books and nod your head yes? Or do you think, well, they really don't get it? They have a different kind of take on religion.
I just don't think it's, I mean, I think that there's a point where, you know, it's religion in, you know, obviously you can go through the whole history of religion. It's you know, the impetus of religion is not bad. It's not a bad thing.
Well, it does bring morality and rules. Some of the rules people might feel oppressed by.
Yeah, but I mean, even so, I mean, well, certainly in terms of some cultures, the rules are psychotic. But in terms of like getting, if what it takes is this God who's going to, you know, send you to hell and it's going to get people to straighten up, you know, good idea. But however it goes, you know, what happens is they all seem to lose their minds, that somehow they all seem to go crazy. I didn't want to dwell on that because it really, I thought that the basic, I was trying to write a book about somebody who felt that there was something and couldn't find the faith.
Well, you say you were inspired by the cover of an issue of Time magazine you saw as a kid.
Yeah, is God dead? Or is, and it was, and that was a shocker. You don't really like, you don't need to bring that up to a 10 or 12-year-old. There's no need for that discussion.
Well, you could have read Nietzsche and come up with the same.
Well, that would have been
question.
Later. Yeah. You know, as it was, I read Catch-22. That created enough havoc in my life.
Well, you grew up in a time, the 60s, where everybody was talking about spirituality and maybe not traditional religion, although that also people started refinding the faith of their parents or in some cases becoming with Christians, sometimes becoming different kinds of Christians than their parents, because it was a period where everybody was talking about spirituality.
Well, because in part, I think what happened was is that the trying to I think what had really happened then for a lot of people is they were trying to have an effect on society and society at large and the war in specific, and they and it didn't work. I mean, you know, it did not reach fruition at that point. We banged our heads. Granted, eventually, but it didn't go the way we had expected it. We were trying to make the world a different place. That didn't totally work. I think a lot of people went inside and said, it doesn't work outside, let's go inside. And a lot of people went in there, in my generation, and just got lost.
Why do you think that isn't happening today with another unpopular war?
Because I think that people have found You know, you watch generations live through stuff, and so that other generations don't have to go through the same process. So they kind of see the error of some's ways. But it was, for me, it was a tremendous experience because I had friends who, I had one friend who followed around the 13-year-old guru, two or three actually, one ex-girlfriend.
That was Maharaji.
The guru Maharaji, who's still around.
Well, he's no longer 13.
No, but he'll always be 13 to me. I mean, that was stunning. I mean, it was just stunning to stand in the middle of nowhere, Colorado, with these people going berserk, and you got this 13-year-old kid in the middle. You're going, this is really, this is something I'll, you know, remember forever.
Why were they going berserk? Did he have a message that was particularly appealing?
He had a form of meditation that was extremely powerful.
And you learned how to meditate from him. Meditation, I think people agree, whether it's done with a religious intent or not, really does have a positive effect on
it. It was extraordinarily powerful because and this is kind of when I bust, I didn't last long. I was not really, I was intrigued by, I wanted to see what had happened to my friends. And I did it, and I ended up, about the second week I was meditating, I was in the sky.
You left your body, you say.
I felt like I left my body. I felt like I was absolutely in the sky. We're not kidding. That scared the hell out of me.
So it was Lewis in the sky with diamonds.
Yes.
Because the Beatles really... The Beatles really started all of that, didn't they? They didn't bring us Eastern thinking, but they introduced an awful lot of people who might not have had any idea that there was such a thing as meditation.
I think they opened
to the general public.
Yeah, they opened the door, and I think that also that as a result, a lot of the guys like the 13-year-old showed up here and said, "Well, here's a market."
But at the same time, it was also a time when people were taking hallucinogenics, and that seems to me to be the opposite of meditation.
Well, it's certainly the opposite, but it certainly led me to certain beliefs I have. I mean, it's certainly not beliefs, but it certainly led me to think there's something else going on, even if I was crazy. Because, I mean, any kind of there's a religious experience has there's a form of certain craziness to it.
I've always wondered about gurus like Maharaji, and there were others. They always had a fleet of cars.
I know, isn't it?
And I always wondered why that was something that people didn't question.
You know what they would say? This was my favorite. Is they would go, he had like three Rolls-Royces before the people had, you know, before the Bentley became the big thing. He had like nine, you know, Cadillacs.
And he couldn't drive. He was 13 years old.
He's 13. He's got all these cars. And I'd say, I would go, that's nuts. What is that about? And he goes, well, you know, he's not really attached to those things. Well, if he's not attached, how come he's keeping the cars? You know, I'm kind of attached to those cars. Why didn't he let me? And he's showing us his non-attachment. But come on.
Lewis Black's latest book is Me of Little Faith. It is published by Riverhead. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. We're back with Lewis Black, who is an award-winning comedian, actor, playwright, New York Times best-selling author. He's appeared on The Daily Show since 1996, now has another show, and written and starred in a string of successful HBO and Comedy Central specials. He has written a new book about his experiences with religion called Me of Little Faith. It's published by Riverhead. Do you see yourself as a writer? I mean, you write. Do you write much of your own material? Because a lot of comedians, actually, it turns out, don't, because they just got to churn out so much
stuff. Well, I don't write. I wrote my Daily Show with three other guys for about 6 years. And then the past six, I don't write the Daily Show.
It's almost, they write in your voice.
They write in my voice, and at times they're. I've learned a lot. It's been that's actually been a fruitful experience. A lot of the things I do on TV, I write only some of, but my act is 98% mine.
And how much of it is written? George Carlin, for example, will tell you that he not only writes everything, but he writes the pauses, he writes the ums, he writes the mistakes. That's all part of the act. But he was inspired by Lenny Bruce, who never did the same act twice.
Yeah, well, we were talking about, I did an interview with him for this documentary that I did for the History Channel, which was great because I got a chance to, he and I really like each other, and we never see each other, and we had this chance to spend, and never really got a chance to talk about it. So it was he was fascinated by the fact that I write nothing down. You know, and that, but that's, it's the way you work. It's how you arrive at your comic voice. He, in order for his comic voice to come out, he really does have to, he scripts it. And he said, I think it was because he didn't, you know, I think it was like, it had to do with going to his educational level, that he felt like it was important. Initially, that was kind of his drive, that he really wanted to write. And mine is, I found it difficult from the very beginning. I wrote plays for a long time, and I really found it hard to write my own voice, but I found it easy to get up on stage and tell a story.
And do you change it? Do you suddenly think of something that's funny in the middle of telling the story and just throw it in?
Yeah. And then
that becomes part of, if you get a really good laugh, that becomes part of the act.
Yes. Because I work enough, I work about, let's say about 180 nights a year, so you know, these things develop over time. So I'm working four nights a week, 75 minutes a night, and I can start on Thursday with a thought, and by Sunday that thought's become a piece.
Working in show business, do you meet a lot of religious people? You've talked about comparing notes with other comics, but that's like comics comparing notes about teenage dating and all sorts of other things.
Yeah.
And they all seem to be talking about.
Well, my friend and co-producer of this TV show that we do for Comedy Central, David Sachs, was the one I said, he is a devout Orthodox Jew, and goes, and I just found out he goes to Minyan every morning. He goes to services every morning. We're working on Friday night. He leaves to go home and for Sabbath. He doesn't turn on the stove. He walks to the temple.
Does he find any humor in what you've said about Judaism?
Yeah, he does. He thinks I'm funny. I'm constantly giving it to him about it. But David knows I'm kidding. You know, I'm not. I respect what his belief is, but I find it funny.
Yeah, well, you're not Christopher Hitchens saying that we should all be atheists.
Yeah. No, I'm just going, I think that's, because I constantly will be having, we're sitting around, and then there's some, whenever anything comes up about something Jewish at the table, I immediately turn to David and give him give him something about it. But the, he's one of the few. I know a couple of comics who are also, have kind of returned to becoming practicing Jews because it gives them a comfort, and it was, and who were people, the last people on earth that I would expect would be practicing.
Now, why do you think religion gives some people comfort and makes other people feel totally constricted?
For me, I mean, I know that watching, it's the ritual that I think people have. I mean, it's my rituals now seem to take place around before my performance. I do certain things. I take a nap. I wash. I shave at that time. I do this. I do that. I have almost a complete ritual, but because it sets me up and comforts me and allows me to get ready to do a performance. I think that's what really helps. But my problem with, you know, they light the candles or they cut the challah bread or Passover, which is this beautiful meal to many. To me, I had so many experiences with these things that, like, in terms of Passover, it just reminds me of stuff I don't particularly want to be reminded of. And in terms of, and a lot of the rituals.
You're not moved when you read "The hill skippeth like rams"?
No. No, nothing happens. I know stuff is supposed to. I get invited to a Passover every year, and every year somebody says, this Passover isn't like the other Passovers. And I go,
yeah, well, why is this one different from all
others? And I go, no, it's the same. You guys, you can cover it up all you want, but we're going to get around to the same thing.
Well, there are a number of different ways of celebrating Passover. One of them is to do the whole thing. Another one is you do the first part, and then you have the meal, and then you say, well, do we really want to do the second part?
Yeah.
And then there are some people who say, well, let's just have the meal.
And then there's the group that I did this thing, which I haven't been able to go to. There's a fundraiser downtown where they have a like me doing something. They have Al Franken does something. Al Franken was in a shower doing something. Each of us are explaining. I'm explaining the Horosis. The bitter. The bitter herbs is, and I explain that while holding a giant piece of horseradish.
You say that you should have devoted your time to creating a new religion.
Oh yeah, that's where the money is. Boy, that's the cash cow. That's the one that's you can't beat it. On the show I'm doing, we're gonna have what we do is it's called Root of All Evil. We debate each week, which is, I'm the judge, two comics debate, which is more evil. We're going to do Disney versus Scientology. So I've been looking Two comics debating.
But obviously they're going to try to make serious cases as well, because they want to win.
Well, they want to win, but it's all done. It's between Scientology and Disney. You've got enough stuff that's funny about what's evil about them. But Scientology, here's a guy who writes science fiction and says...
L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah, L. Ron Hubbard in three quotes, or L.R.H. as they refer to him, in three quotes goes, if you want to make a ton of money, you come up with a religion. Well, that's what he did. He came up with a doozy.
Well, originally it was supposed to be an answer to psychoanalysis.
Yeah.
And you did these things to find out where your hot spots were, your emotional hot spots were, and you worked to eliminate them. And then little by little, you discovered, as L. Ron Hubbard did, that we are actually descendants of, people from Theta or somewhere
Theta,
like
that. Xenu. I can't remember. It's Xenu, I think. Or Xenu was the leader of them. It is Theta.
I thought it was Jor-El.
No, I think it's Xenu.
Oh, that's Superman. I'm sorry. Lois Black is my guest. Boy, I'm in trouble. His latest book is Me of Little Faith, published by Riverhead Books. I was sent something that's about another thing that you're doing as part of an international campaign launched today by the Service Employees International Union to close tax loopholes for the ultra-wealthy private equity and hedge fund managers who have benefited from tax regulation under the current administration in Washington. You are releasing a short video on the web to bring attention to the issue?
Yeah, through the SEIU, the service.
You want higher taxes? Is that it, Lewis?
Yeah, I do. I'll be honest. I said something that I just had a huge fight today during one of the interviews with a guy from Detroit. I'm trying to discuss the book, and he started going off on my political stuff, and I was like, "But I have."
Well, you get involved in politics.
Yeah, I do. But this was it was really literally off the whole case. But the fact was, as I said, he was yelling about raising taxes, and I said, and the first time that I got money, which is not that long ago, where I actually had an income, and everybody'd say, you can go do this and to protect your money and that to protect. And I said, I've waited my whole life to pay taxes.
To earn enough to be able to pay taxes.
Exactly. And so I don't get it. I really don't get it. And I don't get, if we're not paying enough taxes to cover certain things, then we got to raise the taxes. It's like silly. We really have to discuss this? How much do rich people need? Where's the point? But some of the rich are like, they're crack whores who are better at money management. That'll get us off the air.
Let's get back to religion. You've had a few profound and unexplained religious experiences. I hate to bring this up while you're laughing, but
it's all right.
You were with your brother when he died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My brother passed away 10 years ago. This would be the 11th this summer, and he... I had left the apartment. He had gone home to basically to die, and I left the apartment. And when I got home, my sister-in-law said, Ronnie's having trouble. Come back. By the time I came back, he had passed away. The doctor had said that someone should try to revive him. So I began to try to give him mouth to mouth and realize that if I brought him back, he was going to be angry. He would be like, what are you? I finally let go. And but I felt his presence in the room. There's no denying it. I did not feel, and it was weird because it's like, I felt comforted. I didn't have that weeping, you know, the thing that I expected occurred, you know, when I had to tell other people that he died. That was when I cried.
I guess when people die, I know when my mother died, I don't know if I felt her presence, but I kept on thinking about talking to her, even though, you know, I'd then say to myself, wait a minute, she's no longer with us. She can't talk to me anymore. But isn't that because you just miss somebody who is so important to you?
I think so, but I really did feel a presence.
So did that make you rethink your concept of religion or God?
Yeah, it made me rethink something that was up because it didn't seem like he was. And it made me mean that maybe partly that it felt that way because I don't think we go anywhere. I never have thought we go anywhere. I've never felt that.
So then why did you get involved with a psychic? Psychics do believe we go somewhere, or our spirits.
Well,
do.
I mean, we'll go somewhere in the sense that we don't leave. I mean, in the sense that we're, you know, counting the universe. But the psychic is a friend of mine. It's a guy that I know. I don't like pay him to give me information.
Oh, that's the best kind of psychic. One you don't have to pay.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. But his family has this gift, and. And I, knowing full well, spending time with him over a 10-year period, that I believe that he does what he says he does, and it's because his reaction to his job of having what he has to do is the same reaction most people have to a job. You know, because I would say, I said, how are things going? He goes, how are things going? I talk to dead people. And it kind of made me feel like his description of his day is fascinating.
Well, he once called you about your brother with information he couldn't have gotten any other way.
Yeah, I went and saw him to talk to him, and he knew nothing about me, nothing. A friend of mine had said to a friend of mine he didn't know me and said that you got to stop worrying about Lewis. He's going to be fine. His career's going to do really well. I had nothing going on at that point. I was really zip was happening. And
did you ever question whether you wanted to continue, or did you know that? Did you feel that you were going to make it?
I had no other choice. I liked what I was doing. I mean,
because you know, being the last performer and after a long string of comedians at one of the comedy clubs can be a really depressing experience.
Yeah, it's horrible. But also being a playwright. Which can be a hideous nightmare. So I picked these two things, but I enjoyed doing them so much. I just kept feeling like if I don't do this, I'll do that. If I don't do that, and I had enough stuff coming through. I wouldn't say that I would have thought that I would have written two books by now, and that I'd be have a TV show and all of that. But I felt comfortable enough that things would improve to a point.
Well, The Daily Show really turned things around, didn't it?
It certainly did.
So you were a late bloomer, in effect, or The Daily Show really allowed you to reach an audience that you might have wanted to have reached but couldn't under any other circumstances.
Exactly. That's exactly it. It's because Lorne Michaels didn't realize that I was the one who should have been on Weekend Update.
Uh-huh. He wouldn't put you on Saturday Night Live.
No, he never thought I was funny.
Uh-huh. And why do you think the people at The Daily Show did?
They knew me. They'd been around me forever. Liz Winstead, who was the original producer, the one who came up with the idea, she and I had worked together as comedians. Hank Gallo, who edited my book, was a producer there. And they needed somebody who could come up with material, and I was the guy.
Well, to some degree, it's similar to what Stephen Colbert does in that you work against the grain, and that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
And not everybody understands working against the grain as comedy material.
Yeah.
Well, working against the grain reminds me that Lewis Black's latest book is called Me of Little Faith. It is published by Riverhead Books. And it is a meditation on religion. And in the end, you list all sorts of reasons to believe and all sorts of reasons not to believe.
Yeah.
And then people can pick and choose.
Yeah, whichever one they want.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
It was really a pleasure.